This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's a little nippy out, but well, that is fine.
Yeah, that is. That is true. Do you have your Christmas tree up on the inside yet?
No, but I can tell you stories you wouldn't even believe.
I'm sure I wouldn't.
Oh, my gosh. Have you ever installed a 14 or 16-foot light in your house?
No, I've never even seen one.
Okay, well, it's interesting, and it would make a good video.
Oh, boy.
And I wish I had video this whole episode. I've been trying to get an electrician out. In my bedroom, four lights are out in the ceiling. Now, this is like a 14-foot ceiling, okay? And they're recessed lights, and that sounds pretty simple. First of all, my ladder will not reach that far.
Of course.
So I called my son, and I said, Dan, do you have a big ladder? Yes, but he said it's too heavy. It's so heavy, it'll take three people to carry it. I said, okay, forget that. He said, but I do have this other deal that I bought. It's this long pole that screws longer or shorter, and it has a suction cup, he said, on the end. And he said, you just put it up in that recessed light and unscrew it.
Yeah,
I said, Dan, that sounds like a fake deal to me. No, he said it works.
Yeah, oh, just grabs the light, you turn it, and yeah.
Yeah, sounds real simple. Okay, and so he said, well, and it has this other little gadget you can put on there for a little more force. And he said, maybe we should put that on. So he puts that on the end of his little pole. And so he puts it up there. And starts pulling down the whole trim off of the light.
No.
Everything's coming down. I'm going, oh, my gosh, what a disaster. He said, run, get a broom. So it's so funny. So we get this broom. Somebody's holding the broom with one deal. He's trying to pull this down with the other. So it took three gadgets just to get a light out of the ceiling.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. The people that sell these should explain to these people how it really works.
There needs to be some kind of a training course or something.
You need a training course for this. I mean, it was the funniest thing. We're all running around trying to keep from ruining the whole light and the whole thing coming out in our hand. Oh, my gosh. And I said, shouldn't we? Maybe we should go back and wait for the electrician that didn't show up. You know, I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. If we ruin all these lights, it's not going to be good. Oh, Lord.
I'm surprised that it didn't come loose and fall and break everywhere.
That's what we were afraid of.
Okay.
We were lucky that we didn't break any of them. And you know, these were the ones we took out were made in China. So they were real lightweight. The good ones we put in were a lot heavier.
Ooh.
Just tells you about that Chinese stuff. You know? But I don't recommend anybody do this little deal unless you're experienced.
Oh, no.
Because it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. I mean, it was wobbling all over the top and down, and we thought we were going to break it. Oh, my gosh. And then I thought they broke the whole light fixture. Oh, my gosh.
But you had a broom that pushed it back into place?
Oh, yeah, we got a broom. We ran, got a broom, and we're holding the trim on the light with the broom. where it's not going to pull everything out of the socket. Oh, my gosh. You know? Sometimes I wonder, you know.
Wow. More adventures at the Bagby house.
That's right. It's always something exciting happening.
It sounds like, I wish there was a video. I would love to see that. It almost like, you know, how many people does it take to unscrew a light bulb? It sounds like a joke.
About four in my house. Four. It takes four people. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, none of us had ever tried anything like this.
Yeah.
So it was a whole new experience, you know, learning how to do this, worrying about this.
Yeah. All because the electrician didn't show up.
All because the electrician didn't show. I don't have but one light in the ceiling of my bedroom. I mean, it's pretty dark in there. So we were desperate. And so desperate people do silly things. You know?
Wow. Was it just the one, or do you have other ones that you need to change that you just gave up on?
No, we were determined. We were once we finally got that one out and had not broken it and realized that whatever that other deal was that was going to strengthen it, we took that back off. And then it wouldn't pull out the light fixture, the trim, a whole inside, you know. But it was just, it was going left. It was going right up there. That light was just swinging up there. You know, we're trying to get it out.
Oh.
And that suction cup, you have to have it exactly in the middle. If you don't, you're going to have a big problem. You're going to have stuff every direction in the world.
It ought to come with a warning on there. Do not try this at home.
That's right. If you don't know how to do this, don't do it. Just let somebody else do it.
Oh my goodness. Well, at least now, maybe the next time you'll know kind of like how it works or what to do, or you've kind of like, I had a practice run.
We needed some practice of, you know, before we put it up in the air. That's what we really needed. Oh my gosh!
Wow, how long did that take?
It took a while because we thought we were going to break the light fixture. We thought we were going to break the trim, and I don't know how long it took to get one light out. I'd say probably 25 minutes, you know, something like that. Because we didn't have it in the right spot two or three times. And you've got to have that right in the middle or it doesn't work right.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. Next time we'll just call another electrician, I think.
I think maybe we should have just called another one. But, you know, it's just one of those things.
It's a great story, that's for sure.
Yes, it's always interesting, you know, to find out what you can and cannot do and what you know how to do.
That is true. Are you ready for the holidays? I know the outside lights are up and going.
Yes, everything outside is finished. We have lots and lots of extension cords, you know. And everything outside, we finally got the lights to work. We got that done. The grandchildren were smarter than everybody else. They said, you know, I believe those reindeer go one behind the other one and attach to the sled. And I looked out there, I said, you're absolutely right. Somebody did not put the reindeer in front of the sled. Oh my gosh.
Where did they put them? Where were they?
Oh, just around.
You know, just randomly.
I mean, you
everywhere?
Know, they didn't realize the sled and Santa goes with the, you know, with the reindeer.
It's one display.
That's right. It's one display. It's not four or five. Oh my gosh!
So they place the reindeer and they're out grazing in the field.
That's right. And the big Santa has not showed up.
Oh, really? The 25-footer?
The 25-footer has not shown. It may not show. And we went back and looked, and it really is coming from China, so it may not show up. I mean, you know, who would have thought it was coming from China?
I would have never guessed.
I mean, yeah. And it says the label's been put on it. I don't know what that means.
Oh, well, that's a good start.
Yeah, it has been labeled. It does not say it's left China.
Well, then at this rate, you might get it by next Christmas. Which will be great. It'll
That's
be early.
Right. That'll be all right. It'll still work. Yeah.
Something to look forward to next year.
That's right. And we'll have a lot of practice between now and then.
Yeah. Yeah. That's for sure. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
So how are we with everything? I know, you know, there's all
well,
kinds
we
of...
had a maturity.
Really?
We had a $700,000 maturity. And it is a lady that had breast cancer. They gave her 36 months. And we closed it July 23rd of 19.
Wow.
And it had spread to her lungs and bones. And there was a 30% profit on it.
Really? That's
big. And her name is Maria Lester. And for everybody that was in that policy, L-E-S-T-E-R.
Wow.
And let's see. I'll tell you how many people's in it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 8 people's in it.
Really?
So 8 people made 30%.
Wow. That's fantastic.
I thought so, too. I was looking at what they made. So everybody that had $70,000 in it are getting back $91,000.
Wow, that is cool. That's
and
a
one
good
person
return.
Had $78,000 in it out of her IRA. She's getting $102,000. That's pretty
really?
Neat, isn't it?
That is fantastic.
Yes.
Wow, 30%. So, that's one of because I know sometimes isn't that kind of like the top end of where you usually go is around 30.
I like it when it's 30%. And I, everybody doesn't always agree with me that I like the 28 to 30% ones. And, you know, I always say I do. But anyway, that's a great return. And it didn't go as long as they thought.
Wow. Yeah, I was just trying to do the math. You know, July of 2019 till now, it sounds like that was a little less than 30 months.
Yeah, just a little less.
Wow. All right.
So from July of 19...
Till now.
It had several more months to go. So it did come in early, thank goodness. And it was a Banner life insurance policy.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. And, you know, the premiums on this thing were very, very small. We only escrowed $300 for premiums.
Really?
That's all the escrow was.
Oh, wow. Man.
Yeah. That's hilarious, isn't it?
That it kind of is. You know, you think it's going to be a whole lot more than that, but only $300. Wow.
Yeah, and so we had escrowed $117, per person, and one we only escrowed $83. I mean, this is a win-win all the way around.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's fantastic.
And so if they'd had to pay premium, it was $39.
And they didn't, but still.
They didn't. And I'm always telling people, the breast cancer ones, I think we have done very, very well over the years. I've only had 3 go over, and most of them are early. And when it's spread like this to the bones and lungs and everywhere else, it's hard to make a recovery. It's just hard to live. So anyway, everybody, congratulations on that $700,000 policy. They made 30%, and that's a good day when you can make 30%.
Yeah, that's a really, really good return. And, you know, for having it, come in early, I know a lot of people, you know, you talk about these types of things, and it almost sounds like with as much as it had spread, it's almost, and obviously I haven't seen the reports, I'm not a doctor, but it just kind of based on what you said, it almost seems a little bit surprising that it even went as long as it did, as far as it had spread
sometimes if it's not in all the lymph nodes, you know, it takes a little bit longer, but it was in the lungs and her bones. And when it's in your bones, I mean, I've never seen babies in your bones survive.
We
had that one guy, you know, a couple of years ago. It was in his ribs and his bones, in addition to, you know, the other places. And I said at the time, this guy cannot survive. You know, if it's in your ribs and your bones, I mean, it's metastasized in too many places.
Yeah, it's out of control.
I think that Yeah, it's out of control. And I think that's the secret to all this. Sometimes they go over, and there's no reason for it. Sometimes it just happens. But then the ones that come in early, I think it's because you can't fight it in all that many places. You know, you can fight cancer if it's just in one place. But, like, if it's in your bones, it's in your ribs, and then usually the last thing will go to people's brains also. And it's just hard to fight it if it's in two or three locations. So that's what I always look for is, you know, where is it metastasized? Where is it now? You know, and how long do we think with that many places that you can survive? And it's just hard to. You can't hardly do it.
You know, and as you look at these policies, you know, those are kinds of those, I guess you kind of got to dig down and understand kind of what you're looking at. You know, it's one thing I would imagine to say, okay, this is a stage four cancer policy. It's this type of policy. And then that kind of for most people, that's where they go, okay, you know, I get the whole picture, but you kind of go way deeper. You know, where is it spread? What's their lifestyle like? How much are they doing? How much medicine are they on? So, you know, you're looking at a lot of detailed information when you're looking at these policies, not just taking like the basic headline.
And then we need to look lots of times at the backup. You know, we need to read all the reports. You know, how many times in the hospital, what kind of, are they doing radiation? Are they doing radiation? Are they doing chemo? Or are they on the natural deal? If they're on the natural deal, you know, I know and they know that it's really futile. I don't know why you wouldn't at least trust doctors in the States rather than going to Mexico or Europe. And you know, and not wanting to cut on you. I mean, to save your life, is it that important, you know, that you would not let them cut on you? I mean, I don't understand that way of thinking.
It sounds like sometimes people, you know, they just get, you know, maybe desperate or, you know, they're looking for that that new breakthrough miracle cure or, you know, something like that. I don't know.
I think so. And they think in Mexico, they've heard stories where these people were cured or that they prolonged it. Mm. And I don't think that's the case in Mexico. I think they have good doctors probably, but not orange juice, baths, and oil and all this is not going to save your life. Yeah. You need the toughest thing you can get.
Yeah,
you need the big hospitals. You don't need your neighborhood hospital. You need the big guns.
Yeah, it includes, you know, chemo and radiation and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the things that we know work the best of all the other options. So, yeah, you know, and you know, I don't obviously know. We know the numbers with stage four cancer. It's not that, you know, we're you know, wanting all these things to happen, but we know the numbers. And, you know, you have years and years of data that you constantly go through and you're always going back, it seems like, and kind of, you know, making sure that, you know, the things that, you know, you were looking at, you know, maybe a decade ago, are they still applicable now, or have there been any kinds of, you know, other breakthroughs and things? So you're always looking at all these metrics to see if, you know, there's something new that has advanced and things like that. So, you know, it's also great that you're on top of anything that might be advancing and maybe change, you know, some of these LEs.
That's right.
Or things like that.
That's right, because if there's new treatment, we need to know it.
Yeah.
Clinical trials, that's what those are for. And, of course, we've had a lot of people kicked out of clinical trials. They were too sick. They knew that it wasn't going to do any good to have them in the clinical trial. If it's stage one, stage two, lots of times they want them in the clinical trials. It helps them find out what will work. But when you're on stage four and it's really serious, lots of times they kick them out and say, you know, it's not doing any good. And then sometimes they'll get in the clinical trial and it will prolong their life, maybe a year, year and a half. So you have to read that and make sure, are they in a clinical trial at this time? Or if they finished a clinical trial. If they finished a clinical trial, it's a lot safer than one that's in the middle of a clinical trial.
Wow. So they'll just, if a clinical trial is not working, they'll just abandon it altogether.
If they will abandon those people and get a new group of people in.
Oh, wow.
And they say, you know, yeah, you're too sick. It's not, we can't tell from what, the way it's acting on you. It's not going to be beneficial to the trial. So sometimes they'll kick them out of it.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Jeez.
Yes.
Huh. What about policies that are, it sounds like everybody's pretty much fully invested right now. I mean, everybody's like in policies and things like that.
Everybody is fully invested. There might be just a few dollars left, but not much. And so this will give this group a chance to reinvest in some policies and turn that around and make more money. I noticed several people on this have been in the last two policies because I noticed the names on it. I go, well, they've been in the last two policies.
Hmm.
And sometimes people invest about the same time. And so seems like that same group then, you know, may be in more than one.
Hmm.
You know, like if they started the last in 19, they were all investing. And I know several of them were in several different policies.
You know, it's interesting you bring up the groups. I didn't realize you had groups.
Well, it kind of works that way. You'll say, okay, on this policy, we want this one in. So then when that comes due, they might have bought three policies that month. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Interesting.
So they may be, at that time, they maybe are in more than one. And most of this is IRA money.
Oh.
Most of these people, this is... most of it is IRAs.
Hmm. Interesting. You know, when you're deciding who's best for which type of policy, I know you've got people that prefer certain types and things like that. And some people will actually bypass, you know, a good policy because they're looking for a different type of policy to get into. That's their favorite. But when you're kind of deciding, when you're going through these and you're saying, okay, I've got, I don't know, I'm just making something up here. Say you've got three new policies that you've bid on and you've got them. How do you decide from there who would be best for each one? Is it just whoever's next on the list in the rotation, or
sometimes it's who's next on the list, and then sometimes I go, well, I know this person will want to put in 90,000, they'll work on this policy. Sometimes I'll say, okay, I'd rather have this person that only does 50. Maybe everybody's going to do just 50 in this policy. And then sometimes it's our big clients, and we're saying, we need 90,000 from each one to make it work. It might be $1 million policy or 2 million. And then we have the smaller policies, and I have different people that I like to put in the smaller policies because they usually have less money available, and I can put them in a smaller policy and it works perfect for them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So each person...
And some people, it's unique. Everybody has a different way they like to invest.
Interesting. Interesting. So,
yes.
I guess I don't want to say profiling, but because that's not the right word. that's terrible.
Very funny. Yes, terrible.
You've got certain types of investors that, based on their investment level or budget. Budget's not the right word either. But depending on how do you describe?
Based on our experience with them, as far as the way they like to invest.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people invest in different ways. I've got some people that they just want to have their money invested. So they're not as particular, but that's few and far between. Most people have a definite way they like to invest. They may be a 50,000. They may be a 27 month. They may be a 16 month. They may be all out. I've got some that are just all out. Keep me invested, fully invested.
Is there a difference between the approaches, or just kind of like personal preference? Like I prefer blue over red.
It's personal. Everybody has a different way, and I think also people that have been with us a long time, they invest differently than new people.
Really?
People that have been with us the last 10, 14 years, they invest completely different than people that have been a year or 2 years.
How so?
Well, they think different. In other words, they want to be fully invested at all times. And sometimes others will say, well, I'll wait on this one. I don't think I'll do that one. And they're unsure of themselves. Okay?
Interesting. I had no idea.
And now I've got some that every time they have a maturity, they reinvest and never look back.
Wow.
Yeah, and then we have lots of times a husband and wife investing, and that's different also.
You know, I guess maybe it kind of makes sense. You know, maybe at the beginning, you know, somebody's just kind of starting out in life settlements. Maybe they're not used to how it works. You know, they kind of want to see before, I guess, jumping all in. So maybe they want to kind of, you know, see how the first couple policies go. And then, you know, if they're comfortable, then they just kind of like, you know, jump all the way in the deep end. And then I guess probably, you know, there's others that may want to go all in right from the get-go because they've been listening to you for years. They've had other people that have done life settlements and done very well, and they're like, man, you gotta you know, call Faye, you gotta do this, and so they already kind of have like an underlying knowledge just by watching other people that they know. So, but there's no right or wrong really when it comes down to it. It's just about personal preference. There's not a good or a bad approach, right?
No, it's just what you personally want to do, how you want to make your money, how you want to get paid. And as I said, everybody's different. Everybody has a different view. Okay.
When because you mentioned when people the way they want to get paid, what's the difference in people's approach? I guess there are some people that maybe want, you know, say I'm just making numbers up. Say they want to have 70,000 accessible a year, and then the rest. They want to invest. And then I would imagine there's probably others that say, I'm just going to hold this much in cash over here, and then I'm going to use this much to live on and then invest in this much. And how does some of that, is there a certain dynamic to the way people approach it? Or is there, I know we're kind of going behind the scenes here. It's just kind of like seeing, it's interesting how it all kind of sets up and plays out, I guess.
I think it depends if it's a widow, if it's a married couple, or if it's a gentleman. We have a lot of men that have IRAs with us. You know, 90% of our business is IRAs. They have a definite way they want to invest. And, you know, they'll call me. We'll read the LEs together. We'll go over it. They have questions, and then I'll talk to them about it. So they have to make that decision. Is this policy best for me and my family? Is this what I want to do? Is this profit in 24 months, 30 months? Is that a good time for me? So that's some of the decisions they have to make.
When a couple invests, is it, do you find where like maybe the wife might be a little bit more aggressive maybe than the husband? Or
no, women are not more aggressive than the husband.
No, that's
get
backwards.
No, it does not work that way. I've got one couple that he makes all the decisions.
Really?
On her account. That's strange because most people are individuals and they, you know, make it. But I've got one couple, he makes all the decisions. And when we call her, she'll say, you'll have to call my husband, he handles it. Oh. So we have a few couples that the husband handles all the money, both accounts.
Really?
And then we've got some that the husband and wife make joint decisions.
Wow.
And they'll say, I'll call you back, I have to go talk to my wife. Then I've got others, the man will say, I just need to read the LA, and I'll call you after a while.
Wow.
And then some say, Fady, what do you think? And I'll tell them everything I know. They'll say, okay, put me in.
Huh.
So everybody has a different way of thinking about it.
Do most people just kind of go with, you know, whatever, you know, because you know this. You've been doing this for years and years and years. Do they just kind of like rely on you and say, you know, whatever you think is best, just do it? Or do people try to maybe?
The ones that have been with us a long time, yes. The ones that haven't, they make up their own decision.
Interesting.
The others will say, if you think it's good, we'll do it.
Huh. And then I guess it works for people. I guess probably after they've been through it a time or two, they realize, yeah, you do know, you know, all the ins and outs of this, and you say it's good. And a lot of times you'll invest yourself if there's room, right?
That's right. I do. And then sometimes I give it up. Somebody will call and say, Oh, I wanted in that policy, and I didn't get in. Well, give her that. Give her my spot. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I've had that happen a million times. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. Wow. So, you know, I guess it just kind of comes down to the fact that, you know, anybody can do really anything that they want to do at any particular time, however they want to approach it. There's no right or wrong. It's just whatever people are comfortable with, you know, with their money. And so that's what it really comes down to, is what it sounds like anyway.
That's right. And profit is the name of the game.
Yeah.
You know, getting interest, getting it, you know, as often as you can, building up your portfolio. Making it last is important. A lot of people, their oil income right now is tremendous. So those people, you know, we invest their money as much as we can and keep going. And then we have people that have IRAs that they put money in all the time. Then we have people that retire and bring us a lump sum. So everybody invests differently. Sometimes it's a lump sum, one time only, and sometimes every quarter or every 6 months, they'll bring extra money. They'll say, I've got some more money I want to put in my account.
You know, so we've laid out, you know, several options here. So what would you say to maybe a new investor who, say a new investor comes to you next week and they say, okay, I heard you on Saturday. You were talking about, you know, these different options. You know, you could go into, you know, a policy all in. You could go to smaller policies, larger policies. What would you say, what's your biggest piece of advice to a new investor who may be coming in and not really sure how to approach this? What would you tell them?
Well, I would tell them, come, put some money in, see if you like us, see if you like your investment, if you like your returns. If you do, then, you know, come all in. And then some people just come and say, you know, I've just sold my business. I want to put money in. And that's the way we do it. Then some people just say, I've got a 401. I'm changing companies. I want to put it in here. Because lots of times, a new company buys your company, they don't want your 401k. They're not going to go ahead and keep a 401k for you. All kinds of circumstances affect these people and their livelihood and their money. So, you know, we work with different people, you know, whatever their situation is.
And the bottom line is really when you're in a life settlement, it's one of these things where you get in the policy and then when it matures, you get paid. You're not doing long, huge policies. So people aren't having to wait, you know, 5 and 6 and 10 years. That's the greatest thing. Like you were talking about earlier, you know, 30 months is about as long as you generally like to go. There are some exceptions here and there. But for the most part, you know, we're looking at 30 months or less for a return on their investment, and they can go ahead and reinvest in other things. So I guess the takeaway is for new investors, they're not locked into something that's, you know, that they'll never see for like a decade. It's a much faster return.
That's right. And they always know they're going to get their principal and interest. That's what I like about the investment. You know that your principal's safe. You know your interest is safe. You know it's in a life insurance policy. It's not anything weird. It's not anything that you've never heard of. You know, life settlements are Main Street now. You know, when they first started, people were afraid. They'd say, oh, my gosh, we're betting on someone dying. They're going to die whether you and I are invested or not.
Yeah.
And we're just trying to help them and make them comfortable. And when they come to us, they need to sell their policy, usually just for treatment. Sometimes it's to settle their estate early, but usually they need the money. It's cancer's most expensive thing in the world. There's more bankruptcies due to cancer than any other thing.
Wow. I mean, that's a big statistic, and people are trying to be proactive.
Yes. And when we see all these ads, oh, we sold our policy to live it up. I don't believe that under any circumstance. Let me tell you something. They sell their policy because they need the money, folks. Yeah. They need it or they wouldn't be selling their policy. They make it sound like it's just a fairy tale, you know?
They do. They travel the world, and they go to space, and they get in the RV, and, you know, have the golden wheat fields just blowing in the wind, and they're having the time of their life in Europe. That's not the case.
I like the one where it says, oh, we got that big check today. I love that one. That's the best one of all.
That is
one
of my favorites.
We got that big check today. Yeah.
It's almost like you expect somebody to ring your doorbell like the sweepstakes where they pull up in the van, yeah, and there's balloons and they surprise you.
Yeah, and they're bringing all that cash to you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not that.
I can assure you it doesn't work that way. And what they pay for those policies is not great.
Oh, yeah.
I know about it. And it's they're not giving them enough that they're going to take these wonderful vacations and they're going to live it up. I that's a little misleading, but that's okay. But anyway, if people, you know, when they come to invest, ours are all serious investors. You know, lots of times they have the mother, the father. We have the children invested, their aunts. It's a family deal. People that come with us after somebody's been with us several years and they see it works, they invite their relatives to come in, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So it just depends, you know, who you are, how it works for you, and if you can accomplish your goals, you know, by doing this, just old steady money.
Yeah, yeah, and it is. I mean, you're absolutely right. When it's the type of policy, that makes all the difference. You know, the ones that you're talking about where people do all this traveling, those probably are not going to they're not sick, you know, so there's a very good chance that those won't, you know, mature for 20, 30, 40 years, who knows. But when you're only going for stage four policies, you're looking at, you know, those shorter returns, and that's really kind of, it's a steady process where people can put a plan together to grow their wealth, to get ready for retirement, to have a really good solid foundation after retirement. They don't have to worry about, you know, the stock market or anything like that, because life insurance is its own entity and isn't affected by any of these things. So there's a lot of really, really unique benefits from doing this type of investment as opposed to, you know, many, many other types. So this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
It's a story of a little bit. It's not the whole story. But Howard Hughes, senior, not junior. Howard Hughes invented the drill bit. A lot of people don't know that.
Really? I don't know. Wow.
Yeah. Right. Of course, he was capitalizing on Spindletop, the oil discovery, and he began devoting his time to the oil business. And on November the 20th, 1908, he filed the patent for the Sharp Hughes rock bit.
Really?
And he got his first patent on these in August 1909. Can you believe this?
Wow.
And it was this rock drill. It was a two-cone rotary drill. It would penetrate medium and hard rock with 10 times the speed of any former bit.
Really?
And it revolutionized oil well drilling. And it put him ahead of anybody else. Patents were very important back then to capitalize on your inventions. And other people had bits, but his was the one, you know, that was famous. And where the first offshore drilling for oil in Texas was occurring in Harris County, this is in 1909, and this was southeast of Houston on Galveston Bay. And it said it penetrated 14 foot of hard rock in 11 hours, which no previous equipment had been able to penetrate at all.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. And after his partner died in 1912, he took over the management of the whole company, bought the widow out, and he got, as I said, he had all these patents for, this dual cone rotary drill bit. And that was the basis and the technology of Hughes Tools Revenues. And in 1914, it was used in 11 states and 13 foreign countries. In 1914.
Really? That within 5 years?
Yeah. And then 9 years later, the company's engineers created a tricone rotary drill bit. And from 1934 to 51, his market share approached 100%. So nobody was using any other drill bits. They were using this famous drill bit, you know, that he had. And then in 1972, he took the company public. Hughes became public. And he made $150 million in one day.
Wow.
$150 million.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
And when was that? 72, you said? 71? When he took it public?
Yes, in 72.
Man.
He took it public and made $150 million on one day. Now, and I didn't remember this, Hughes Sr. died of a heart attack in 1924. And Howard Jr. became wealthy at the age of 18 years old.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, yeah. And he started using the profits to fund all of his other ventures, and it was called Toolco. And they were paying him $50,000 a year. Can you imagine? And so he was putting his planes, his autos, houses, everything, charging it to the company. And they said in 1931, Howard used Hughes Tool Company to buy controlling interest in TWA. That was in 37.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And in 32, they formed the Hughes Aircraft Company, which was a division of Hughes Tool. And they did all these wartime contracts in World War II. He was one of the largest defense contractors and aerospace companies, outpacing all of his original tool business. I mean, they were big in World War II. I didn't realize that. And so Hughes Aircraft became a separate company, and he donated it to Howard Hughes Medical Institute as an endowment.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. I mean, they were so wealthy. I mean, it's amazing how wealthy. And at one time, in 8 years, it was making $285 million.
Wow. $285 yeah. million.
Yeah. And, you know, they opened plants in Ireland, West Germany, Saudi Arabia, even Russia.
Really?
Yeah. And so from the early start, you know, they were so smart, all these engineers. I mean, all the drill bits were being used in all the foreign countries. And so then, you know, they became, as I said, one of the largest defense contractors and aerospace companies in the world. It's just amazing what all he did. And then all the automation in all their plants made standardized drilling bits. All this became automated.
Hmm.
And then, of course, they created Hughes Dynamics, and they were doing consulting, data processing, even for other companies.
Wow.
And they put, and that company didn't do well. But they held a minority stake even in Northeast Airlines.
Really?
They sold TWA in 1966. And, of course, as you know, the famous part, as you know, he bought the Frontier, the Landmark, the Sands, Castaways, Desert Inn. You know, he was on a buying streak. And, of course, you know, he got involved with all those actresses and got exclusive contracts for them.
We'll leave it at that.
Yes, I know. And of course, they were right there on Harrisburg Boulevard in Houston, Texas, and they were the biggest oil tool manufacturer in the world.
I didn't realize, I guess, that they were into so many different things. I didn't even realize that they were involved with TWA at all. I don't know why. Maybe that's common knowledge.
I remember that really well, that they owned TWA. But they became the largest, most automated equipment for foundries, forging, heat treating, machines anywhere.
Wow.
And, you know, they did design, research, meteorology, and engineering for all the oil fields. So that was their main thing. But the other things is made them a lot of money. And in 1972, as I said, they sold the tool company. And it eventually became part of Baker Hughes Tool Company.
Wow.
Right there in Odessa. And Baker Hughes has not done real well. As long as they owned it, I think they made a jillion dollars.
Wow. Man.
Yeah. But just a little drill bit really put them in the spotlight, 1908, 1909. And back then, you know, you wouldn't think these people had the engineering know-how to develop all these things. But there's so many people that did, that they were so smart.
You know, it almost seems like, you know, the early 1900s would have still been almost like primitive times. I mean, we weren't there. We don't know. It's just, you know, what we see and what we, you know, read about. It seems like the technology and the engineering that they were coming up with at the time was probably, I think it's probably fair to say that it was ahead of their time, really. to be that, you know, that early to come up with these things that would so drastically affect things going forward. And then within 5 years, what, all over the world and you know, the 100%, nearly 100% market penetration. And it's just like, I mean, it just sounds like, you know, they were really ahead of their time. And then things just really exploded when essentially the world caught on. It's really kind of amazing.
That's exactly right. And they were just, engineers back then, I don't know how, they didn't have a lot to go on, but they were very brilliant. There's no doubt about that.
Wow.
It amazes me how smart these men were that developed everything for our country. And look what Howard Hughes did. I mean, Senior, he was so brilliant. And then, of course, Howard Jr. came along, and he wasn't any slouch. He wasn't an engineer, but they had all the engineers on the payroll, which really put it in the spotlight. I cannot imagine these drill bits were used in 1914 in all these foreign countries as well as here.
I know it. It seems like, you know, that would back then, and I hate to say back then, but it's just, it seems so unlikely that, you know, because you didn't have it. It seems like we're all really, really connected now with the, you know, internets and phones and social media and emails and all these things. It seems like, you know, you just literally reach out and essentially touch somebody on the other side of the world. But back then, it seems like people were in such silos. It's hard to imagine how they actually, you know, got so far and wide, and how their net was cast really all over the world like that back then. It seems like a much bigger feat.
Yeah, in 1914, how would the people across the Atlantic know about you, apparently?
Yes. Yeah.
A cable. I guess they did everything by cable.
Yeah.
The only thing I can figure out is they would cable these people in these foreign countries, then ship all this by ship.
Yeah.
Everything went by ship to all these foreign countries.
Man. Yeah, and it took just, so long.
Oh, yeah, there's no telling how long it took to even get there. And I wonder how they paid. You know, I thought of a lot of things, you know, that would be interesting to know how they did it back then.
It really is fascinating. I mean, man, you know, now you see, well, it's, you know, easy. You just call somebody up, or you shoot them an email, or send them a link, or tweet them, or, you know, something like that. And, you know, it's done within seconds. But we didn't have all these things in the early 1900s. And so the communication itself, like I said, just for people to even know about these things. And then, you know, just to get the knowledge out, and then to get people, you know, on board and say, oh, yeah, okay, I've done my homework. I really want in on this. It looks great. And then, you know, put it in order, and then, you know, ship it, and then get it to there. It just seems like it would take so long, and to accomplish that in within like a couple of years. It really, when you stop and think about it, it really is it's a big deal. It's a big accomplishment.
And I look at the little place, the pictures of his little company, and of course the building is now at the University of Houston. They moved it there.
Really?
But it was just this little old building. I mean, it looks it's a little one-story building, and doesn't look like much. And here's how they started this famous company in this little old building down there at 2nd and Girardi Street in Houston, Texas. It's just amazing.
Wow. And again, more good stuff coming out of Texas that changed
the world.
That's right.
Everything. Texans are just smarter than anybody.
Yes, we are.
There you go. We are. We got it.
Take credit where credit's due.
That's right. Texans are brilliant.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. AmericanFinancialMedlin.com is the website. There's a lot of good things there. Our references are there. References, people. It tells about what people have made, how they made it, if it was early, if it was late. There's a lot of information for new clients on our website.
You know, and that's, you kind of touch on something there that's kind of a big deal also. We can talk about it. You know, people who invest already know a lot of this, you know, and so because they've been through the process. But for new investors who might be thinking about it, and you talk to a lot of people who do think about it for a very long time, they're like, oh, I've been listening to you for, you know, months or weeks or years or whatever the case is. And then they come over and they're unsure and they want some more information and this and that. You know, people who recommend it, the investment to other people, it's a big deal because they're putting their own reputation and their own friendship and their own relationship with that person on the line. People don't usually recommend something that's terrible. So
that's right. You wouldn't want to do that.
It's a fast way to lose a friend.
There you go.
So yeah, it's a big deal, and people can actually find out, you know, all this information. They can see how, you know, the what the experience is like from other current and past investors, and just kind of get like a real world perspective of what is actually going on with a life settlement. What is the greatest aspect of this type of investment as opposed to something else? What's the biggest draw for people?
Well, to me, that it's steady, that your principal's always safe, because you know that's all you've got is the money that you've accumulated. If you lose that, you know you're in deep water. So I think that to me the best part of it is knowing that it's in a life insurance policy, and I think a life insurance policy is as safe as we can get. Nothing's 100%. There's always risk, but I feel like a life insurance company is safer than most other investments. I just, you know, over the years, I've never heard anybody say that a life insurance wasn't, you know, a safe investment. And if you're in other investments, the risk is much greater. So to me, the best part is knowing your principal's always there. And as you get older, your principal's all you've got. So if you lose that, can you start over if you're in your 70s? Yeah. Most people could not. You know, we were reading this week a case on the internet, and these people said they lost from $60,000 to $350,000.
Really?
And they said, we've had to borrow money from our children.
Oh, wow.
Man. So your principal is all you've got. You've got to make sure that principal's always safe.
Wow.
So, and you asked me what the greatest value. I think that's it. Knowing that that nobody can steal it. It's in a life insurance policy.
Mm-hmm. And if something happens, you know, around the world, maybe that say that something happens on Wall Street, you know, all of a sudden the bottom falls out, or, you know, war breaks out in Europe someplace, things that can easily, you know, affect people's wealth that have nothing to do with their actual portfolio. You don't have to worry about it with a life settlement because the insurance companies, when the policy matures, they're going to pay out regardless of what happens around the world. That doesn't fluctuate.
No, and knowing that that we have a third party paying them, I think that's the biggest safety tool there is. We don't access their money. Their money is at Nevada Trust or Bank of Utah, and the bank is responsible for their money. They are our go-between, you might say. We hire them to take care of the money. In other words, they're the ones that gets the check from the insurance company. They put it in everybody's account. We tell them how much each person's got. It goes into their account. There's no middleman except the bank, and that's the way it ought to be. If every company did it this way, it'd be a lot safer.
Yeah, there'd be much more security measures in place so that reduces people's risk. And there are three big risks that we always like to cover. What's the first biggest risk?
The biggest risk is it can go over. Are you prepared if your policies go over? Are you going to panic, or are you just going to sit there and say, okay, I know it's went over, but I know I'm going to get paid. I've just got to ride that out. So that is your biggest risk. If you can't afford it or can't stand it, you shouldn't do it. The second risk is it's not liquid until it matures. So it is not liquid till it matures. I think everybody knows that. Then the third risk is if a life insurance company ever went broke, it would take longer for you to get your money. All the companies now are so huge, we don't have to worry about that. It's not like it was in the old days. Everybody has to put up reserves to cover your policy. So we're virtually covered at all times.
A lot of times people will, as we get into the end of the year, into the last, several weeks, people will look back and say, okay, what have I got to wrap up? What maybe resolutions did I have last year that I haven't, fulfilled yet? What's left on my to-do list for this year? Just kind of like taking stock of things before we end up at the end of the year and getting to 2022. If somebody was going to come over, if they've been thinking about it, they'd like to, get on board, what would they need to do, and how much time would it take to get things going? Because we gotta travel, we gotta see people, we have other things going on during the holidays. We don't want to take up too much time doing this. But so what would that look like?
Well, they would need to come over. They would need to get on the phone with me or in person. Either way, talk about what their goals is, how much money they want to put in. How do they want to invest it? And then where is the money? Is it in a 401k? Is it at the bank? Is it in stock? Then we talk about all this. How do you want to do this? And then we have to make the transfers. We make transfers every day. We do 401k transfers every day for people. That's no problem. If it's in stock, we authorize the sale of the stock. We just have them get on the phone with the broker and authorize that. If it's in an annuity, let's say it's a 20-year annuity, and they say it's matured, I'd like to take my money out, it's an old annuity, it's not making money anymore, then we do that. We can liquidate that annuity. We can liquidate just about anything except a REIT. A REIT's not ever going to be done. Remember that. No REITs, please. Anything but that, I'll do.
Yeah, I know your tone always kinds of change. It changes a little bit when you bring up REITs.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we tried for this couple. It can't be done. You cannot get out of a REIT, honey. You're just there. You're going to be there till the end of time.
Strap yourself in.
That's right. Just say if it doesn't make money, if it does, you're there and I hope you didn't put a lot in it. That's all I can say.
All right,
I hope it's only $50,000.
Yeah, hopefully it's a minimal investment.
That's right.
So there's a lot of things that need to be done. You handle a lot of it on your end, so people don't have to spend hours and days and weeks and months doing things. You handle a lot of it from your end, so people don't even have to worry about that. So
That's the thing,
though, is that people do need to at least pick up the phone and make a call and come, set up an appointment to at least talk to you, at least get the ball rolling. I assume you do have some time this coming week for some
people. That's right.
People.
And they need to talk about it. Lots of times they'll say, I know all about it, and that's okay. If they already know all about it, I'll go over it one more time. Be sure they know, how the investment works. But they need to call. They need to set an appointment. Let's talk about it, see what they want to do, see if we can help.
Okay. And one last time, Faye, for people to call and set up that call and make an appointment, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.